From Vermont Public Radio, this is The Frequency. I'm Anna Van Dyne.
And I'm Liam Elder Connors, in for Henry Epp. Today on the podcast, while there are national protests calling for police accountability, Vermont State Police say they aren't expecting to get body cameras anytime soon.
The state police has a budget of about $70 million. So to say that they don't have the resources to do this simply just doesn't pass the smell test.
First, here are today's headlines.
At least for now, Vermont's success in slowing the spread of COVID-19 has faltered. The health department reported 36 new cases of the disease yesterday. That's the largest daily increase in almost 2 months.
Yeah, and they're pretty much all in the same place. All but two of the new cases are thought to be associated with an outbreak in Winooski. There are now 41 confirmed cases in the city. The health department says the outbreak's likely the result of community spread. There's been a pop-up testing facility in the city all week, and the department expects to have more next week.
And no one in Vermont is currently hospitalized with the disease. In all, there have been 1,026 cases in the state, 881 people have recovered, and 55 people have died.
And the town of St. Johnsbury is going to conduct an independent investigation into an encounter between police and protesters. Four people were arrested during a protest against police brutality in the town on Wednesday.
That protest was one of many to happen across the nation after a white officer in Minneapolis was seen on video with his knee pressing into the neck of George Floyd, a black man who then died. The officer has been charged with murder.
The incident in Minneapolis has reinvigorated calls for law enforcement accountability measures, including the use of body cameras. Here in Vermont, more than two dozen agencies outfit officers with the devices.
But Liam, haven't you reported in the past that the Vermont State Police, which is the state's largest law enforcement agency, doesn't have body cameras for all their troopers?
Yeah, that's right. Almost exactly a year ago, actually, I wrote that story. And the agency said they're not expecting to get body cameras this year, despite saying for 5 years that they want the devices. I talked to Captain Gary Scott this week, and he told me they actually have the money to buy the cameras, about $700,000, but they don't have funds for the video storage.
We would need a year-to-year line item to financially sustain this program.
State police have often cited budgetary restraints as the main sticking point in outfitting troopers with cameras. In January, VSP initially asked the legislature for nearly $388,000 for the body camera program, about 0.5% of their $74 million budget. But that was before COVID-19. State police say their initial budget proposal has been tabled in light of the financial crunch caused by the pandemic. Now, Scott says he doesn't expect state police will get cameras this year.
Are you pushing to accelerate this process right now?
No, I mean, I'm not actively pushing because of the financial situation and what has happened legislatively in the pandemic. So I think it's sort of to see where we're going to be at budgetary-wise.
Increasingly, the state police are outliers in Vermont law enforcement. At least 27 police departments, including those in Lindenville, Brattleboro, and Berlin, outfit officers with body cameras. Burlington, the state's largest city, began using the devices 6 years ago when Michael Schirling, now the Commissioner of Public Safety, was chief of the department. Schirling said back in 2014, body cameras were an important technology for police departments to embrace.
It creates a level, as we've mentioned, of added transparency, but it also clearly documents the performance of our officers. It highlights the challenges that they face day to day, and ultimately it helps us to continue to be a learning organization.
There have been 44 state police shootings since 1977, and none resulted in charges against the officer. State police do have some body cameras. Members of their tactical services unit, which responds to things like hostage situations and manhunts, are outfitted with them. And state police cruisers also have dashboard cameras. But ACLU staff attorney Jay Diaz says it's disappointing that given the national calls for police accountability, state police still aren't prioritizing body cameras.
The state police has a budget of about $70 million. So to say that they don't have the resources to do this simply just doesn't pass the smell test.
Videos of police encounters can be a powerful force, as demonstrated by the recent protests sparked after the killing of George Floyd. A video recorded by a bystander shows a white officer kneeling on Floyd's neck for more than 8 minutes, despite Floyd telling the officer he couldn't breathe. The four officers involved were fired, and one has been charged with murder, and the others face charges of aiding and abetting. Vermont State Police have condemned the actions of the Minneapolis officers, calling the incident, quote, beyond disturbing. But critics like Diaz say state police have long been reluctant to embrace one of the key tools that could prevent similar incidents here. Last year, state police asked that money set aside to buy them body cameras instead be spent on new patrol rifles. The legislature denied that request.
Saying that you want the cameras is not the same thing as saying it is a priority for you to put the cameras on every state police trooper.
In Vermont, the release of body camera footage has led to policy reform and criminal charges in the last year. Footage of a Burlington police officer shoving a black man into a wall led to a federal lawsuit and spurred the city to review the department's use of force policy. In another high-profile case last year, body camera footage showed a former St. Albans officer punching a handcuffed woman. The officer was fired and faces criminal charges. Attorney General T.J. Donovan, who filed the charges, said that the body camera footage was, quote, critical.
In this case, there is a videotape, and the videotape is going to be the best evidence in this case. And so I don't want to speculate what would have happened without it.
While state police might not be expecting to get body cameras this year, some lawmakers will be pushing for them.
We've waited too long, in my opinion.
Senator Dick Sears is on the Appropriations Committee and chair of the Judiciary Committee. He told me he'll advocate for body cameras to be included in the state police's budget.
Something will happen. And we'll scratch our heads. You know, why did we put this off again?
He says that given the national unrest and calls for police reform, it only makes the matter more urgent.
And now we're going to hear two interviews between teenage boys and their moms. Both boys go to Killington Mountain School, a ski academy in southern Vermont. When their school closed for COVID-19, they went home to their families who live outside the state. And as one of their remote assignments for school, they did some interviews. First, here's Hugo and his mom, Renee, in Quebec.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Hugo.
Okay. What's the biggest way your life has changed because of the pandemic?
So for me, it's life has slowed down. We wake up in the morning. We don't need to wake up at 6. Your father and I, we chat a bit. We slowly make our coffee and our breakfast, and I just a few steps away from the kitchen is my workspace. I work here in the office. Looking through the window on the east side of the house, I have the beautiful sunshine coming into the office's window, and I love working in this office in the morning and looking at the forest around us. And I have the absolute amazing opportunity to have you with us. You came back home much earlier than you were supposed to. So I've cherished all of these additional days that I had to spend with you close in the house. Also, more time to cook. I love cooking, but I have absolutely no time to cook usually when it's the normal pace of life. And now that we have more time on our hands, we're able to cook a lot more fun meals and different meals. So I guess that's how things have changed for us.
Okay, thank you, Mom.
And now here's Tucker and his mom, Andrea, in Connecticut.
All right, this is about the COVID-19 pandemic. How has living through this experience made you feel?
Sad.
Yeah.
So, between my two jobs, one is a nursing supervisor, I've had to go to work and ask people and give them assignments. And they've been scared. And they haven't wanted to go in and take care of people. At times, although they're some of the hardest working people I have, they've been so scared. They don't want to bring it home to their kids. They don't want to bring it home to their parents if they're younger. And it's been really challenging to keep everyone boosted as a nurse supervisor and to make rounds and have to set an example that they need to do the work just as you would do the work. And these patients need to be taken care of. And then happy because inevitably, as scared as they are, they've all risen to the challenge. They've all done amazing work. Other challenging things is just my other job. I'm constantly deciding where patients are going and reading through their histories and charts. and people knowing when they've been making those decisions that they're going to be put on a ventilator. They've been crying and the nurses have been consoling them and setting up cell phones to talk to their families, which may be the very last time that they ever hear each other's voices. There definitely has been some good wins where we're cheering patients on and people are getting out of the hospitals, but it's been just incredibly sad.
What memory of this time do you think will stay with you?
There's multiple memories. Right now, I want to say the most impactful thing really is when I am having to place for the work that I do, that I have to get someone where they need to be in the hospital, and I have to read the chart, and the ones knowing that likely aren't going to survive the next few days. That's been pretty impactful. And that's because it's happening every day. It's very challenging. I guess the next thing is having kids that have been away for the rest, from such a good part of their lives at such a young age. Even though that job is pretty challenging, I get to come home every single day to see my kids, which maybe not their ideal situation, but it definitely makes mine. I get in the car and I'm thankful for my coworkers because they're amazing. And then I know I get to come home and my kids are physically here so that I can see them. This has been a unique time for us as a family. So I'm very thankful. And I think that this memory, though some of it's full of sadness, I know this is going to be time that I can remember more as like when you were home, when you were babies with me and you were with me all the time. You're here now.
All right. That's it.
The Eye on the Sky forecast for today, mostly sunny with some afternoon clouds, chance of an isolated shower or thunderstorm later in the day, highs in the low to mid 80s.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency. We had reporting today from you.
No one else.
Just you. The recordings from Killington Mountain School came to us via Nina Keck.
Our music is by Blue Dot Sessions, and our executive producer is Mark Davis. I'm Liam Elder Connors, in for Henry Ebb.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. Talk to you on Monday.